Howie Carr, Boston Herald columnist and radio hitman.
Howie is sort of an insidious force in this area.
By the way, do we have Howie Carr?
He's around here someplace. Where's Howie? Where is Howie?
You know Howie Carr?
Howie, where the hell are you? The legendary Howie. He's got that radio going.
We love Howie Carr, right? Yeah.
I was referred to today as 1970s Boston.
Hey, paperboy.
It comes from the tabloid talk show stuff in Boston, and it was concocted there.
He's a good guy, isn't he, though?
It's Howie Carr.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. Thanks for being with us. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Howie. He'll be back on Monday, but until then, we've still got some great content for you, including this conversation we're about to have with one of my favorite guests. Matt Boyle is the editor, the Washington Bureau Chief at Breitbart. He always has the insider's perspective of what's going on. And Matt, as we start off today, President Trump truthing out this afternoon about his conversation with Vladimir Putin. They're setting up to meet again. Zelensky coming to the White House tomorrow. What do you make of this recent development?
Yeah, it seems like President Trump has a lot of momentum towards peace negotiations there after his historic deal with in Gaza. And I think that the thing that President Trump has done that other presidents, at least in the last several generations, haven't succeeded on, is that he's tied the economic promise of peace to the peace negotiations. So what he's done is he's used the economic might of the United States as an addition to the military might of the United States to execute the vision that advances the American agenda and the American interest forward in ways that, when you look back at history, you see the Reagan administration was known for peace through strength, right? Ronald Reagan was known for peace through strength. What Trump has done is he's expanded on that. Yes, he can show the sword, and he did when he bombed Iran. And he's used our military effectively when he's going after the Venezuelan boats that are trying to bring drugs to the United States. All right, that's showing the sword. That's showing the military might of the United States. The economic might of the United States is perhaps even more significant. And having a business guy like Trump in the White House using the economic might of the United States to actualize and realize the outcomes that are in the best interest of the United States, which is, again, a real deal in Gaza and ultimately a real deal in Ukraine that ends the war there, I think is really important. I thought that I read that Truth post seconds after Trump put it out, and there's a few things that stand out to me in it. He said he talked to Putin about trade between the two sides, and I think that's important because here's the thing: he's showing them we've got the sword here. We can use the sword economically, militarily, et cetera. We can also use the olive branch, right? Like, and frankly, the Russians, I think, want to do business with the West, right? And so if there's a way to do that where we can achieve the objectives that are in our interest, in our national interest, our foreign policy agenda, and open up where everybody wins, right? Like, similar to the whole Gaza situation, then I think that's the goal here. And so I think Trump's got massive momentum towards his peace agenda worldwide, and his peace deals and trade deals are all intermingled and intertied. And I think that the momentum that he has coming off the Gaza deal could help him secure a Ukraine deal.
Well, one thing that didn't escape my attention about that truth either is that the meeting between Putin and Trump is going to take place in Hungary, where Viktor Orban is prime minister. Viktor Orban was at the Egyptian peace summit with Trump. They took a picture together. Trump had very, very positive things to say. Did you see any significance of the fact that it's in Hungary?
Well, yeah, Trump has a longstanding close personal friendship with Viktor Orban. The two of them respect the heck out of each other. And so I think that Trump feels safe going there. But I also think that Viktor Orban is close with Vladimir Putin. So it's a neutral ground where the two parties can go and feel safe talking about this and working out the details. Having a place like that to go to do this is important. And I think that also, seeing the it feels like we're headed towards the end of this thing, just like it was in the lead up to the end of the war in Gaza. Again, that deal is fragile, right? Like, so it's important that the pillars of the 20-point plan are held together in Gaza. We're going to need to see a similar type of a framework come together out of Ukraine. But again, Trump's peace team, his lead negotiators like Rubio and Witkoff, I mean, these guys have shown themselves to be extraordinarily professional and competent in ways that, John Kerry and Joe Biden and Barack Obama and all these other losers in the globalist foreign policy establishment, George Bush, weren't. And so we've got a heck of a chance for prosperity. And look, the big picture here, the really, really big picture, if you take it up to, not 50,000 feet, but 100,000 or a million feet looking down, the real big picture is this is all about China. So China wants America distracted in Eastern Europe and in the Middle East and in Africa and everywhere in Latin America. They don't want us focused on China. If we're able to clean up these messes and then get the real focus on the China for the remaining 3 years of President Trump's second term in the White House, then the United States is going to be, this is why the Chinese are doing all the things that they're doing with the trade stuff that's leading to the new tariffs and whatnot, right? They want America distracted in the status quo, because with the status quo, they just continue to gobble up and eat away our market share of our industry, right? Like, and the long, slow decline of the United States continues. Trump's trying to turn that around. And I think he's gotten to a place now, if you pull together his various trade deals with his peace deals, he's got something like 80-something percent of world GDP now in trade deals with Trump and the United States. And he's got the beginnings of the end of the war in Ukraine and an end to the war in Gaza. I think that the Chinese Communist Party is freaked out in Beijing. I think Xi Jinping is panicking, that they see what he's doing and they see what the geopolitical moves that he's making and the steps he's taking towards reversing that trend that started in the aftermath of the Cold War, where our globalist leaders acted like it was the quote unquote end of history. And that's what they all kept saying. They all kept saying, oh, it's the end of history. It's not the end of history, right? Like, and then they decided that our Wall Street people saw a market with 1 billion people and they figured, oh, okay, well, we can just go and, get loaded over there. And it's like, no, that's not how this works, because they're a communist regime. The government controls which companies can operate and which ones can't. It's a totally different system that's directly at odds with us. So again, communism, and by the way, we love the Chinese people. The Chinese people are fantastic. The Han people, they're amazing. It's not the people.
They're just depressed.
It's the system. It's the government. It's the communist government. So and we're not even calling for regime change there. It's just look, you have a communist government in Vietnam. They're one of the countries that made a deal with us, but we just need them to stop spreading their malign influence worldwide and trying to engage in a campaign of global domination, which is what the Chinese Communist Party has been doing through their Belt and Road Initiative and other measures. So that's what this is all about. It's all about China. It's all about turning around the trends that these globalists started in the aftermath of the Cold War. It started with Bush 1, then Clinton, then Bush 2, then Obama, right? Trump was a temporary reprieve in his first term, and he started turning it around then. Then Biden came back in, and it was bonkers bonanzas for the globalists again. And now Trump's back, and he's stronger than ever. And I think that we're going to actually turn it around now.
So turning our eye back domestically, Trump's had great negotiation success abroad, but here at home, the government is shut. It doesn't seem like there's any movement whatsoever other than John Fetterman getting all of a sudden this hero treatment in Washington for being the one sane person, which I never thought I would say that John Fetterman is the voice of reason here. But obviously the Democrats, like, they're worried about the socialists coming for them. They have to keep the government closed, at least through the No King protest this weekend in D.C. so that Schumer can, you know, have his Kodak moment. But what do you see actually happening here, Matt?
Well, it's a good question. I think that the big picture here at home is that the Democrat Party is no longer led by sane people. It's led by socialist crazy town people, right? Like, and so you saw this week this big CNN town hall with AOC and Bernie Sanders. They are the leaders of the Democrat Party now. Like, they are the face of the Democrat. That's the biggest messaging event that we've seen from Democrats since they shut the government down, okay? It's been AOC and Bernie Sanders in that CNN town hall the other night. So that to me is the moment, right? Like, this is the thing. And then we're weeks away from New York City electing a socialist, Zohran Mamdani, as their mayor. Zohran Mamdani is, for all intents and purposes, the leader of the Democrat Party in America today, right? Like, and the socialists won. Like, they run the Democrat Party now. There is no moderate Democrat. There are decent human beings who are Democrats. Don't get me wrong, right? Like, I'm not saying that all Democrats are bad people, but I'm saying that the Democrat Party as an institution is completely captured by socialism at this point, right? Like, and so what we need to see happen is that other people need to step up that don't believe in that and take control and take the reins away from them. And that has not happened yet. And so as it stands today, socialism is controlling the Democrat Party. They are socialists. Like, and so, and by the way, many of them are proud of it. And yeah. But people like Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, they are freaked out looking at their left flanks, thinking that they're going to be the Eric Cantor of the Democrat Party. Okay, if you remember Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader on the Republican side, lost the primary to Congressman Dave Brat. The difference is Dave Brat and the conservatives that took over the Republican Party are same people that had a clear vision for this country. It's the American Revolution versus the French Revolution, okay? The Democrat side, what you're seeing with the socialists, that's the French Revolution. It's they're running around with guillotines, right? Like, and so it's crazy town people. And so I think that Donald Trump shouldn't even try to negotiate with Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries. He should call in Zohran and Bernie and bring them to the White House and negotiate the deal with them.
Right? No, I think you're right. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think if you want to see it, if you want to see it playing out, I'm sure you're watching the developments this week in Maine, where there's this proxy war going on between Bernie Sanders, Zohran Mamdani, and Chuck Schumer in the Graham Plattner versus Janet Mills primary to take on Susan Collins.
Yeah, well, I mean, there you go. That's a proof positive of it right there in Maine and right in all across New England. But I mean, the fact is that the radical left has won. They're in the driver's seat on the Democrat side. And it's only by the way, there's these reports out there across the establishment media that I think Axios called like 100 something the House Democrat candidates across America and asked them all if they'd vote for Hakeem Jeffries if they win their congressional races. I think only a handful of them said they would. Right. Like, most of them are saying they wouldn't, or they aren't answering the question. They're refusing to answer the question. Right. Like, so, I mean, that's the thing is that even if they survive their own races, right, like, and they don't go down like a canter, right, they might be the Boehner. Right. Like, and they might go down that way, or McCarthy. Right. Like, where they get ousted as speaker. And so so I don't know if Hakeem Jeffries, even if the Democrats were to take the majority in the House in the midterms, which, by the way, I'm not sold on. I think it's a coin toss, and it is going to come down to a gritty battle in the trenches. It may happen. It may not. I don't know what will happen there. But ultimately, I do think that if the Democrats were to take the House, I think that Hakeem Jeffries' odds of becoming Speaker of the House are slim to none. I think he's in real trouble. So that's why I think he's behaving the way he's behaving. And I think that Schumer's in a similar situation as the Senate leader. It's tougher to get elected speaker than it is to get elected Senate majority leader or minority leader or House minority leader, because as speaker, you need 218 votes or, you know, on the floor of the House or there's abouts, right, depending on how many members are voting and present and all that kind of thing. Whereas the leader position, minority leader in the House and Senate or majority leader in the Senate, you just need a majority of the conference to vote for you, yeah. Right? Like, so it's a lot easier for Schumer to hang on than it is for Jeffries. But I think Jeffries is in real trouble, and I don't know if he'll ever be Speaker of the House, even if the Democrats take the majority next year.
Well, as we get closer to the election, we'll have you back. Matthew Boyle, he's Washington Bureau Chief for Breitbart News. Matthew, always great to have you. Thanks for being with us on the Howie Carr Show.
You bet, anytime.
This is the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne. Imagine a scenario where you or your loved ones face a threat. Your first instinct might be to resort to lethal force, but it's crucial to consider a safer, less lethal alternative first to avoid the legal complications associated with firearms. Introducing Byrna, Byrna's less lethal pistol launcher. This device is equipped with tear gas and kinetic ammunition and designed to incapacitate an attacker for up to 40 minutes, providing a critical window for you to escape or get help while minimizing the risk of permanent harm. Here's a real-life account from a Byrna customer named Adam. While heading to his night shift, Adam encountered a road-raging driver who swerved dangerously, stopped abruptly, and aggressively approached him. Remaining calm, Adam dialed 911 and armed himself with his Byrna launcher. He aimed the laser out of the aggressor's chest, which immediately de-escalated the situation, and the driver returned to his vehicle and awaited the police. The officers confirmed that Adam's non-lethal response was perfectly judged. That night, Byrna didn't just prevent a potential tragedy, it saved two lives without causing physical harm. Byrna is legal in all 50 states, requires no background checks, and can be conveniently shipped directly to your door. Over 500,000 units sold and proudly hand-assembled in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Visit Byrna.com/Howie now for an exclusive 10% discount. That's BYRNA.com/Howie. We'll be right back on the Howie Carr Show.
Follow Howie on X.
I've got to post a link with witty comment.
At Howie Carr Show. Howie Carr is back.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne. I did like Matt Boyle's suggestion. I think that would be great. I think it would be a great own of Schumer if Trump just invited Mamdani and Bernie Sanders to the Oval. Have them come in and negotiate. I think that would be great. It would be great. Today's poll question is brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly. Contact him at localsilvermint.com. Taylor, what is today's poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at howiecarshow.com, is who will win the Democrat primary for U.S. Senate in Maine? Janet Mills or Graham Plattner?
I mean, it's interesting, right? I think the Democrat Party has been taken over by the socialists, and right now, Graham Plattner is on the ascent, but Janet Mills is coming in hot. Today, she was asked about him, I think, and she did one of those. Did you ever see, Taylor, how Nancy Pelosi, her favorite way to insult people was to, like, pretend she didn't know who they were?
Yeah, or say, they're cute.
She'd mispronounce their name, and she'd be like, who is that? And she'd mispronounce it, and there's that whole Mariah Carey meme of, like, I don't know her. It's the same kind of thing. So Janet kind of like has demurred on him to try to pretend that he's not kind of a name that she knows, and she's not engaging yet. But I think that she's got Chuck Schumer and the masters of the dark arts going after him. They've obviously got his deleted posts from Reddit and other things. He is on the rise, but she starts with a big advantage. And I think that they're going to do whatever they can, because this is really a proxy war for Chuck Schumer versus the radical left. So I think it's going to be close. It's going to be hard fought. But I give the slight edge to current Maine governor, who I hope does not win and is retired soon, Janet Mills.
58% say Janet Mills will win.
She's been gaining steam. It started at 100% him, then she was 54, she's 58. You think she'll get to 60 by the end of the show?
Possibly.
More Howie Carr Show when we come back. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
It's Howie Carr.
542-42, the number here on the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Howie. 617 on the text line says, don't invite that commie bastard to negotiate with Trump. Don't give him any more coverage than the New York commie is already getting. I mean, it's not really about Mom Donnie. I think it's really about just showing what empty suit Chuck Schumer really is. Schumer is not the leader of the Democrat Party. He is beholden to the socialist left. And so why negotiate with him? AOC already made the comment. She said, come to my office and negotiate with me. If you want to talk about opening it up, come talk to me. Show that AOC and Bernie Sanders are really in charge. That's what you really do. That's what it's about. And it's not about giving him any more airtime, but they need a permission. They need permission. They need to have this stop the No More Kings rally on Saturday before they have the ability to be able to negotiate. They can negotiate. 844-500-4240. Speaking of negotiating, what do you think, Matt? Do you like the idea of moving the World Cup games out of Boston?
I'm kind of interested to see if they could do it, just because I feel like everything might be already, like Mayor Wu said, everything's already signed. But moving them out, I mean, it's not going to bother me either way. I'm not going to be trying to drive on Route 1 or into Boston at that point in time. So,
isn't it really the left that started with all this cancel stuff over the policies they didn't like when they moved? Was it with the World Series? What did they move that they took out of Georgia over the...
The MLB moved the All-Star game out of Georgia.
They took the whole All-Star game out of Atlanta because of the
abortion bill that they had passed or were proposing to pass.
Yeah. And then, or I thought it was the election reforms, but the same thing. They were the ones that started saying, oh, we're going to use sporting events if you're not following policies, whatever else. They do this stuff. And then when it's used, when Republicans say, okay, two can play at this game, President Trump went and negotiated for FIFA to come. And he says, all right, I'll negotiate him for them to not come. And she says, well, you can't do that. That's unconscionable. It's probably an existential threat to democracy for Donald Trump to say there are going to be consequences when you have these failed Democrat cities who don't cooperate with federal law enforcement. I think there can and should be consequences, and they should be the same consequences. If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. It's funny how they're happy with this stuff when they're in charge and they're the ones doing it to achieve policy goals. But when a Republican does it, they won't do it. Let's hear some of what President Trump had to say about moving the World Cup out of Boston. We'll start first. He started earlier this week on the 14th. He started talking about it because he said Boston might be unsafe. Cut three.
Boston had some street takeovers that we saw. Are you going to work with or try and work with the mayor of Boston? And then they have a World Cup. They have several World Cup games. I know Argentina knows about World Cups. They have several World Cup games. Could those games move to cities that do work with
them? We could take them away. I love the people of Boston. I know the games are sold out. But your mayor is not good. There are worse than her. At least she's intelligent. You know, some are extremely low IQ. Those bother me more. She's intelligent, but she's radical left. And they're taking over parts of Boston. That's a pretty big statement, right? We could get them back in about 2 seconds. All she has to do is call us. We'll go in and take them back. But she's afraid to because she thinks it's bad politically. She could take them back, too. The Boston police are great. I mean, I know them. They love me. She'll never tell them to go after Trump because they love me and I love them. And I got a tremendous police vote and military vote, you know, and firemen vote. All of them. No, I think she is hurting Boston. The answer is yes. If somebody is doing a bad job, and if I feel there's unsafe conditions, I would call Johnny, the head of FIFA, who's phenomenal, and I would say, let's move it to another location. And he would do that. He wouldn't love to do it, but he'd do it. Very easily he'd do it. And this is the right time to do it. If I thought Boston was doing something that was going to be cause safety conditions for the World Cup, I could say the same thing for the Olympics, because, you know, we have events that are in different locations for the Olympics. It's based in L.A. If I thought L.A. was not going to be prepared properly, I would move it to another location.
See, look at that. He's saying if they're not prepared, if they're unsafe, I'd be willing to do it. He talks about Mayor Wu. He says she's smart and she knows what she's doing. There are some people who are dumb and they bother him more because they're just not smart, but she's smart, but she's just radical. She's just radical.
And he says they've got to be safe. And I honestly believe, by the way, one of the things that's bothered Trump about D.C. is that he lives in D.C. He's a city guy. As he drives around, he watches what's happening outside the windows. And he thinks about when world leaders come and they visit Washington, D.C. as the nation's capital, what are they going to see? When American people from around the country come to their nation's capital, they want to go to the museums, they want to go to the Smithsonian, they want to go to the parks. What are they going to see this government that they're paying for on display? What are they going to see, and how are they? How is it going to be displayed? He thinks about it as a developer, as a businessman, as someone who loves cities and buildings. He thinks about this stuff, and he says, you know, for if we're hosting the FIFA World Cup in Boston, it should be a world-class city that's safe and clean, and it's an example of American greatness. And that's not what we're seeing. He says, if it's unsafe, of course, I would move it. And then he ratcheted up a little bit. Ratcheted up a little bit yesterday. Cut number four.
I know you talked about having some distaste for Boston recently. Is this one of the cities that you might be looking into? And can you give us a hint about other cities that you might be...
You're saying for where? For where?
For Boston.
Yeah, well, Boston has a bad mayor who at least is a reasonable IQ person. You know, most of them are low IQ, but and they're so bad. I mean, what's going on in Chicago is just, you'd think the guy would say, hey, look, we have a problem, Mr. President. Could you come in and straighten it out? I could have that, we could have that done in a month if we had their cooperation. It's gonna be done anyway, but we could have it done in a month. Yeah, Boston, she's got four areas that are, you know, wrong. And, you know, somebody said, would we think about taking the World Cup away from Boston if they don't straighten it out? And the answer is yes, we have the right to do that with FIFA. So if we think that L.A. is going to be bad, or we think that applies a little bit to the Olympics, too, but we'll talk about FIFA first. You know, FIFA is very hot. If we think there's any reason that, whether it's Boston or anywhere else, that they're not doing their job, we're going to take that those World Cup games and move them someplace else.
Don't you have to imagine that the head of FIFA called Trump the second that that happened? You know that they were there. They presented him with the trophy. They've been excited to have his engagement and participation, especially because soccer isn't necessary. I think it's growing in popularity in the U.S. only on account of the new arrivals to the U.S., but it hasn't historically been the most successful type of sporting event for Americans to watch. And their ratings have been down. And so I think they've been excited to have Donald Trump, which we all know he's one of the best promoters in the country. They've been excited to have him on board with getting people to care in the U.S. about the World Cup, to have it in the U.S., to think that they're going to get people to do it. And I'm sure the people of Boston have been excited. I'm sure that the second that he started talking about it, they were on the phone to him faster than you can believe. Faster than you can believe. But that's Trump. Trump is a negotiator. He's a negotiator. He understands how to make unrelated things be related. And so if you're not going to work together with him on something that's a policy that he thinks is going to benefit Americans, he's not going to work with you on something that only benefits you or your constituency. And notice the reporter there. She says, oh, you were talking about punishing Boston. He said, no, I love the people of Boston. I love the people of Boston. It's just their mayor. And I do think it's funny. Matt, do you know why he keeps saying that she's not a low IQ person? Is it just because of her education? Is that why he says it?
I'll be honest, I have no idea. I was surprised when he started saying that.
Because he says it over and over, and I think Trump is someone who's always been impressed by, you know, pedigree and where... Did Michelle Wu, where did she go to school? Did she go to Ivy or...
I believe she went to Harvard. I can look that up real quick.
Because he, you know, remember when he was appointing his Supreme Court justices, Trump always has this thing that he likes to say that someone's right out of central casting. And he would say about his Supreme Court justices that they went to Harvard Law or Yale Law or whatever. He was very impressed by that. It hasn't stopped him from being very vocal about the failings of those Ivy League institutions and how they're performing now. But it's just funny that when he talks about Michelle Wu, he always makes it a point. Maybe it's because she's Asian. I don't know. There's something that triggers for him to say she's not a low IQ person. She's a high IQ person. Maybe Curtis. I don't know. It's funny to me that that's the association that he makes, and I'm curious about it. But he says, you know, she's radical, and she's radicalized. And I think that's what is true of a lot of people that have joined kind of this more socialist movement, is they're not low IQ people, but they've bought into an ideology. They've bought into an orthodoxy. There are things that they believe that just haven't worked anywhere else in the world. They're dangerous. They're not helpful. They're endemic to that whole party and that whole movement. I want to talk to you about All Family Pharmacy. Medical freedom matters, and you should be able to choose the treatments that are right for you and your family. No mandates, no pressure, no red tape. All Family Pharmacy has everything you need, from essential medications to advanced biohacking support, all delivered fast with a doctor's prescription included. Your health decisions should be between you and your doctor, not dictated by government agencies, big pharma, or insurance companies. Flu season is here, or it's coming, and you got to prep for it and be proactive about your health. The best time to prepare your medicine cabinet is before the flu hits your home. Being proactive beats being reactive every time. Essential medications every home should stock before flu season include antivirals. They ease symptoms and speed recovery. Flu kits and sinus infection kits complete packages with everything you need to treat symptoms quickly. Vitamin C, D, K, magnesium for immune support. Beyond the basics, All Family Pharmacy carries biohacking products to keep your energy, focus, immunity, and weight loss goals on track, so you stay ahead of the game. NAD Plus supports energy at the cellular level, boosts recovery, helps slow aging. Methylene Blue enhances focus, sharpens memory, supports brain health. Glutathione, the body's master antioxidant, boosting your immune defenses. Stock up now at allfamilypharmacy.com/Howie. Don't wait until flu season knocks at your door. Visit allfamilypharmacy.com/Howie. Use code Howie10 for 10% off. All Family Pharmacy makes it simple, fast, and reliable to get the medications that your family needs. This is the Howie Carr Show, and I'm Aaron.
Howie Carr is back.
The texters have a lot to say about Mayor Wu. I didn't realize, because I don't live in Boston, so I don't know. And by the way, I know they had in the primary, Kraft's son didn't do so well, and he's kind of dropped out. So she's kind of going there uncontested. 508 says Trump was just comparing Wu to Chicago's mayor, and compared to him, she is high IQ. 781 says it's somewhat ironic that Michelle Wu's parents escaped China when the communists took power. They went to Taiwan and then came here. Now their daughter went to college in the U.S., Harvard, obviously, and she's obviously a socialist, disregarding her family's history. You looked it up, Matt. Where did she go to school? She went to Harvard College, Harvard Law?
Correct.
All right, well, One degree short of the number that I have, but I think it's the Harvard pedigree. That's why he's saying it, because she got accepted to Harvard twice, which is hard. So she had to have been high IQ, and he probably thinks it was back. And then it actually is. It was probably during the time. Didn't Harvard lose their court case about discriminating against the Asians for admission? So she would have had to do pretty well to get in, despite their discrimination. Let's see, 781, I think it could be a huge point for anyone who went up against her in election to show she's been indoctrinated, basically went against her parents' upbringing to become what they escaped. I know it's true, 781, you would think that would have a thing, but no one, she's really running uncontested. 413 says the news just reported John Bolton was indicted. Earlier today, they had been reporting that the DOJ was seeking an indictment against John Bolton. I don't know if we know. Do we know yet what he was indicted for, Matt? Have you seen it?
I haven't. Let me look it up.
All right, we'll pull it up. We'll find out. John Bolton indicted over the handling of classified documents. Huh. Wonder where we've heard that before. So Bloomberg is reporting 17 minutes ago that the U.S. Justice Department has charged John Bolton with mishandling classified information. We'll bring more to you on that as we have it. John Bolton, I think that we've expected to see this coming after there was the raid on his house. We know that they left with materials. And this is what I want you all to remember. I want you all to remember what was said back when it was discovered what Donald Trump had in his house. And remember that, I mean, honestly, I think the raid at Mar-a-Lago was the moment that the tides turned on Donald Trump. I think until that moment, it was unlikely that Donald Trump would have ever returned to power. But all of a sudden, it was this big visual display that exactly what he had been saying was happening. And Trump was the one to tell us, by the way. The American people wouldn't have known if Trump hadn't let everyone know that they had the amphibious vehicles and the armored cars, and they came and drawn guns into Mar-a-Lago to seize the documents. And back at the time, we were told that, oh, it's never okay, no one ever does this. And then it turned out there were classified documents at the homes of Mike Pence at the home of Joe Biden in his garage. We heard all the places where the documents had shown up. And now John Bolton, former national security advisor to President Donald Trump, also has documents. And now he apparently has been indicted by a federal grand jury in Maryland for his handling of classified documents. It looks like right now they're quoting sources that didn't want to be named. So we'll wait to see it go on the record. But I mean, I'm not surprised given how I think there are two things here. Number one, I think there's an overclassification of documents. I think they'd classify a lot of stuff as confidential and classified and all this other stuff. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what it is that he was accused of having. And I think we all should find out. But the fact that a judge authorized the warrant to search his home, and I think that this has been ongoing for a bit now, the investigation, and now that they have the indictment, they're likely to have the goods on John Bolton. And I don't doubt that he has some stuff that he probably shouldn't have had, because there are people in these positions, and you hear from Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris makes a big point in her book, which I decided to read. I didn't read it. I listened to the audio book, which is way worse because she narrates it herself. She goes on this big, long explanation of how the classified documents, how offended she was because it's been such an inconvenience on her life to always have to go to a secured facility, to a SCIF, to be able to read classified documents, and how she was willing to do that. It was a big thing, and that Trump couldn't do it. Now, let's see what she has to say about John Bolton. 844-500-4242, the number on the Howie Carr Show. Let's grab a quick call and talk to Owen. Owen, you're on the Howie Carr Show with Aaron Chadbourne.
Hey, Aaron, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I just was calling to see what you guys thought about this whole ballot scandal that we got going up here in Maine, and the fact that, you know, between Shanna Bellows and Janet Mills, every time they're asked about it, they think it's comical. They laugh.
Well, I'm sure they think it's funny, because their way that they've administered the elections, the way they've governed the state has been a joke. But you're right. I mean, 250 ballots went missing. They were discovered in an Amazon package. Lady in Newburgh, the Maine Wire broke the story. Shanna Bellows seems to think that Steve Robinson is personally responsible for it. He went to her press conference, tried to ask questions. She pretended he wasn't there. He lives rent-free inside her head. I haven't heard Janet Mills say anything about that, anything about the illegal Chinese weed and marijuana taking over the state of Maine. She's been unaccountable for it. There is a bigger story there, and I don't know what it is, but I think the FBI is investigating. Other people are investigating. They're investigating it as if someone stole the ballots. And so there's definitely something there, because I've had on my local radio show in Maine, I've had some local people come talk about it, and they keep making reference to the crime that's being investigated of someone having stolen the ballots. And if you talk to UPS, if you talk to Amazon, if you talk to the local clerks, there's something that someone knows here that's not yet public. And I think it needs to be made public so that the Maine people, the American people, have confidence in our systems. But I don't have a lot of confidence that until we get to the bottom of the story of what happened and who did what. Part of it is early on, Shanna Bellows said that she was going to have her own deputies investigating it. And I guess there is a small division of state police that report to the Secretary of State. And if there was mishandling in the Secretary of State's office by Shanna or someone that works for her, I think a lot of people wanted independent investigation. And because the ballots had to go out of state to Massachusetts to a processing facility and back in, it has multi-state jurisdiction, which means the feds needed to be involved. And so I do think the FBI is the only one that's going to give us the real story. And I think it's good for us that it's got some multi-state jurisdiction, so that the influence Janet Mills has on state police or Shanna Bellows trying to investigate herself won't be the end of the story. Jump line when we come back. This is the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.